going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of American Faces. I don't know why I felt like
saying
I like it.
I like it.
This is our continuing and educational season about health and wellness. We hope you're enjoying the episodes we're dropping so far. You know, we've touched on nutrition, the fuel we put in, touched on our emotional health. I think it's time for us to talk a little bit about our actual body.
Yeah, for sure.
And my body is in better shape than it was. I've definitely worked really hard on getting rid of my pate.
Yeah. We're genetically predisposed to the pate.
I'm going to tell you something, man. I was incredibly pleased and felt a lot of weight off of my shoulder.
Yeah.
Because I work out a lot and I eat well. And there's this area of my body that's just, like, it's very difficult for me to lose fat in. I lift weights mainly. That's what I enjoy. I like going to the gym. I like lifting weights. I don't like running. I just know that about myself. I might have spin class here and there, but like lifting weights has been where I go for working out.
Right.
And I remember I was in Florida and my mother was teaching yoga.
That's adorable.
And we went to her yoga teacher, 83-year-old dude, Claude. Brilliant man, incredible yoga teacher, lovely, lovely, lovely gentleman. I'd been lifting at that time, pretty strong, you know. He was doing, at 83, was doing so much with his body. He was able to hold poses for three times as long as I could.
Oh, I couldn't even. I saw a guy at a crunch gym, had to be in his 70s at least, shredded, just in amazing shape. And all he did was stay in the stretching area and do yoga. And he's putting his whole weight on his forearms and doing the plank straight out and just craziness.
But what I learned about, and I've learned this from trainers that I've talked with, flexibility is paramount.
Oh, it's incredibly important.
To your strength. Someone said it to me in a way that I liked it. Flexibility gives you access to your strength.
Ooh.
And I would not stretch. And I remember I was working out for 5 months. It was while we were shooting. And towards the end of it, all of a sudden, I stopped being able to do as much weight.
Right.
I thought I was tired. Right. I thought I was just tired from like the year. But then I like rested for a few days and went back at it. Still was having trouble. And then someone told me about this. And I was like, oh, I'm just too tight.
Right.
My chest was tight. My arms were tight because I just wasn't stretching because I was like, oh, I don't need to do that. I'm just going to hit that. And I think there's this attitude that I have that maybe is shared that stretching's not that important.
Side note, you know, it's weird on that note because I was trying to do squats and I kept leaning forward.
Oh, yeah.
And then apparently I have a really tight soleus.
Exactly.
In my mind, inflexibility is like associated with muscle and strength.
Ooh.
Like those two are.
Yes. I love what you're saying because this idea of what is strength? What is strength really? Because that's what Claude was challenging me because he had very little muscle mass. He wasn't built.
Right.
He was not like your 70-year-old dude at Crunch. He was a very lanky. He was like when you look at old yoga in like the books, the people that are doing the poses in there, they're like they don't have huge chest muscles.
Right.
Their like biceps aren't bulging. You know, their quads aren't like thunder thighs.
Right.
They are just bodies.
Right.
But it was remarkable. He made me challenge the aesthetic and what strength really means.
Right.
And I love what you're talking about because you're saying, I think you're saying the same thing.
I guess. Well, I'm just saying like in my mind, if you're inflexible, that's because you're strong. I'm the weakest person on earth. I have no muscle. So the idea that my calves could be tight, it's like, oh, well, that makes no sense. Inflexibility is almost something I was like, oh, that's kind of, that means you're strong probably.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's because you're in good shape.
Does that mean that is that part of why you don't stretch?
No, I stretch. I just didn't stretch enough. Like in New York, you're walking like 8 to 10 miles a day. So it makes sense. Your calves will get super tight.
People talk about the shoes you're wearing, like and how much impact on it. I mean, we should be stretching. I mean, ideally in the world, we probably should be stretching twice a day.
It's actually sad how much I don't want to go to yoga because I know how hard it is. But also how much Indians just don't go to yoga.
Well, okay. So then bringing up yoga is fascinating because I felt this weird pressure. I don't know if you felt this, but when I was growing up, I should already know yoga.
No, but it's embarrassing when these white people are kicking the shit out of me in a yoga class. For sure. For sure. I feel that like this is embarrassing.
But did you think that's a pressure that we put on ourselves? Is that a pressure that other people were putting on us?
I think it's us.
You think it's us?
Because no one cares if an Indian is bad at yoga. If a white guy dunks on a LeBron James, people are going to be like, God damn. And I get why LeBron would be embarrassed because of society. But no one's going to have that reaction if a white woman is more flexible than me.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying. I hope so.
I mean, be like, look at you. You ain't shit.
Well, this is bringing up some fascinating questions that I'm thrilled to ask with our next guest, who we're delightful and thrilled is going to join us. So to answer all our questions today, we have on Aditi Shah. Aditi is a yoga teacher based in NYC with a big smile. Everyone, you can't see that, but she got a big ass smile on her face right now. She's very excited to be on this podcast, I can tell. She's a mentor at Yoga Vida.
Yoga Vida.
Yoga Vida. How would they say it in India? Vida?
I think Vida.
I don't know. It's like a mesh of yoga and then a Costa Rican thing that they say, oh. Like Pura Vida.
Oh.
Or I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. It's probably maybe. Like Pura Vida, but Pura like Vida, whatever. Yeah. It's okay. Yoga Vida.
So it's like a combo of...
It is, yeah. Indi-
oh, great. Well, we'll ask questions about that. As you can tell, we did a ton of
research. I didn't
start
it, so that was, you know.
You know about
it. She
didn't
do much research either, so we're good.
She is the creator of the yoga department, and she also volunteers with the nonprofit organization Yoga Gives Back. She regularly teaches yoga classes in NYC. So to all our listeners out here, we will be making sure you know when you should be coming to class. But thank you, Aditi, for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
How long have you been practicing yoga?
I guess it depends on whether you would consider a practice to be a regular practice or just like how long have you known about yoga as it's like been part of your life, because
we got time lessons or both.
Okay. So, I mean, growing up, I definitely encountered yoga because my parents are from India and brought yoga into my life. Once in a while, we'd have people come over and teach us classes, which were very different from yoga now and here. We do like very slow yoga, hold our postures for a long time, breathe a lot.
Is that what they meditate. Call hatha yoga?
Yeah. So you might hear that called hatha yoga for sure.
And that then, was what your parents brought you and introduced you to?
That was like my introduction.
Okay.
I was also kind of under the impression that from like, I think Iyengar Therapeutics, that yoga was just a healing tool, because if you go, for example, to the Iyengar Institute in Pune and you're like, hey, I have like this issue, they'll give you a prescription, like yoga.
A yoga prescription for you to cure your
do these three poses 8 times a day kind of deal.
Exactly.
Cool.
Is it only for physical ailments or is it like,
no,
I have asthma?
Yes.
Wow.
That's amazing.
I have anxiety. I can't sleep. So
are you saying that, or is that an example of...
No. I'm saying that's an example of things that yoga can help you with.
Gotcha.
Not that I'm like anywhere near that level of understanding yoga therapeutics. But anyway, I was under the impression that that's what yoga was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really commit to that because I was like, just liked to move a lot. And I thought it was kind of boring.
Huh. How old were you? Like, were you like, are we talking early, like 6-7 years old?
Yeah, kind of I was a kid. And I was also introduced to meditation as a young teenager by a sadhvi, like a monk. And it was like the kind of meditation where it was like, sit in a chair, close your eyes, and just count your breath. Mm-hmm. And like clear your mind, which was really, really difficult for me to do. So even though I was introduced to these concepts and, you know, had every intention of, I mean, I didn't dislike them. I really struggled with them because my brain was a little bit, I just wanted to move around a lot. I was a kind of outdoor barefoot kid. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until college that I started to actually practice yoga. And it's because I stopped playing soccer and running as much. And I was like trying to face the reality of like becoming an adult. And I don't know, I thought I would try it. It just kind of stuck. After college, I briefly had a job, quit, moved to India.
How old were you?
21. No, 20. I was 20.
So you moved to India for yoga, or you just moved to India?
No, I moved to India because before I was in college, this is a complicated story, I guess. I grew up in Bridgewater, but right when I was
graduating. Where's that, Jersey?
It's in Jersey.
She says it like we all knew.
I know. Sorry. She's like, that's Jersey arrogance.
I grew up in the bridge.
So I grew up in central Jersey. It's like totally suburbia. It was really nice. I grew up with like 3 other Indian kids. And then once I hit high school, there was an Indian temple built in my town. And a lot of other Indian people live there now, which is really interesting. But my parents decided to move at the end of high school. So they moved back to India.
How many Indians?
Yeah, you're right. They were like, no. Actually, they just, you know, they retired. They wanted to give back. They do a lot of social work and they're retired. So
right. They
moved actually to Bangalore, even though they're originally Rajasthani. And after college, once I graduated, Well, first of all, they sold our house, so I didn't have somewhere to go. Wow. And I was like, well, if I don't want to be in finance, what should I do? Like, I studied math. And I went back to India because I like didn't have somewhere else to go.
You grew up going to India a lot?
Did you? I did. My parents took us to India like every year, maybe more than that. I went to India when I was a baby, like every year of my life.
You feel really connected with India? Was that, I mean, before you moved there, did you ever think that you would move there? Was like, how closely did you feel connected to India?
I did not ever think I would live in India.
Right.
As a kid, I definitely resented going because I was like, why can't I go to summer camp instead? Like, Right. Why did I spend a month in India? I didn't really get it.
Did you enjoy it when you got there?
I don't know. I think as a like when I was really young, I think probably mixed feelings, right? I really wanted to be like everyone else and do fun summer things.
Right, you wanted to fit in. Right.
Yeah. Of course, I loved like visiting my grandma, but I hated that it was hot. And then we got bitten all, like bug bites in India, right? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Got bitten all the time. But I'll say the difference is that because I went to India so often, I was not scared of it. I think a lot of people, you know, when you haven't like spent a lot of time in India, it can seem overwhelming.
Yeah.
Right. Also, when I went to India, I didn't plan on moving. I actually was just like, I'm going to go hang out with my parents for a little while and figure out what to do.
Wow.
And I practiced tons of yoga. I learned how to cook really well. Like I just didn't have anything to do. Right. So I was like hanging out with my parents, trying to figure it out. And then once I was already there, I was like, maybe I'll stay here. And then I did. I moved to Bombay.
So you were doing yoga then?
I was just practicing yoga. It's funny because at that time, my mom was like, yoga really suits you. You should think about going to Mysore and like, maybe you can open a yoga school one day. And I was like, wow, no, definitely not. Never going to do that.
You know, what's fascinating is that like, I didn't grow up with yoga at all. Like, it's interesting you talking about your experience that your parents came and brought yoga to you.
It wasn't like a huge thing to them, right? It was just like,
but it's still
normal.
Part of their life.
Yeah,
I didn't like, know yeah. about it.
Oh.
Like, I mean, my parents, we didn't do yoga at home. Like, did you?
Very, like once or twice they tried to show me some stuff, but never like a class.
See, I find that fascinating. That's a very interesting difference between our experiences.
Yeah, my dad is spiritual and I mean, my parents are religious. So they're open to yoga as a means towards meditation.
I guess it was just surprising to hear a parent, a South Asian parent, encourage you to continue yoga as like, potentially like a career.
Well, when I already was like, I'm not being a doctor and I'm like leaving finance, I was like, well, maybe you should do something that's not sitting like being at home and like, great. So you've baked many breads.
Like, they were just like, you just get out.
They weren't at all. Actually, that's not true. My mom is actually super sweet and supportive and she was definitely trying to help me and like help me figure out what maybe I would like to do. She was not at all trying to kick me out. If it were up to her, I would like live with her, you know?
Right. you're talking about this. And the way you describe it sounds kind of casual, almost. You're practicing and you're doing a lot of it, but like there wasn't a ton of intention behind it. Like
it was just personal, right? It was like, I wasn't like, oh, let me practice yoga so I can share it with other people. I was like, let me practice yoga for me.
What was it that you felt like yoga was giving you in a personal practice?
So obviously being in a place of instability, kind of feeling like my life was in flux and I'd worked all of these years or kind of been on a path that now maybe I wasn't going to be on anymore, didn't feel great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that yoga lends itself to a feeling of equanimity. So I won't say that like yoga is going to cure your problems or make you happy, but it definitely is going to make you feel or can make you feel more even, like stable and still.
One thing I hear about exercise a lot, one thing like, you know, doctors say about exercise. I'm getting a reaction that's very interesting. Let me ask this question. Do you think yoga is exercise?
No.
Interesting. You don't find,
I mean, yoga is certainly physical and there are certainly physical benefits, but is like the purpose of yoga exercise? No.
What is the purpose?
What is the purpose of yoga?
So this is interesting. And I will say, I think exercise or fitness or flexibility and mobility is like one of the biggest reasons people get into yoga, but, and yoga is evolving. So, you know, maybe it is that now, but traditionally yoga is about meditation. There's a whole philosophy behind yoga.
Well, let me ask you this. Yoga is walking meditations are about meditation also, but you're still walking.
Okay, so
like yoga meditation.
So this is going to be a long detailed answer, which is that there are many different kinds of yoga, but for the most part, the way that kind of yoga history has lent itself to Western yoga is that a lot of the yoga that we practice has come from, there's like a guy named Krishnamacharya. He was a king, and he wanted to cultivate yoga and like kind of popularize it, not just in India, but it was during the British Raj. And so he wanted to like have an Indian identity in that way. And so he is actually the person who hired and created programs with BKS Iyengar, who like we all know Iyengar yoga, and Patabi Joyce, who created Ashtanga yoga. And a couple other people who pretty much like that's the yoga that we more or less hybridize and practice today. Both of those lineages adhere to or claim to adhere to a text called the Yoga Sutras, the Patanjali and Yoga Sutras. And Yoga Sutras come from a school of thought, actually, like one of the, like in Hinduism, there are six darshanas and one of them is yoga. And so the Yoga Sutras are basically a bunch of sutras that explain to you how to achieve yoga. And yoga is supposed to be the stilling of the mind. And so when yoga speaks about a practice, it's actually a meditation practice. And in the book, it certainly says that the object of your meditation can be whatever you want it to be. So it ostensibly could be your practice, but I don't think most people are in their practice trying to focus on, you know, one pointed focus on their practice in the aim of meditation.
So you're saying the intention behind most people practicing is not lined up with, and not, you're not placing judgment, I don't think.
Correct. I'm not placing judgment.
Right. But you're saying that Western or yoga as it is now is not in line when you talk about it as exercise, then the intention is not in line with what the original yoga was meant to be.
So I wouldn't call that the original yoga though, because there is also yoga before that. There's other yoga schools and other.
It's not the intention of the Yoga Sutras.
Right, correct. It's not the intention of the Yoga Sutras.
So that's why you say, because exercise is not about meditation. It's about like.
Exercise.
Right.
Sure.
Can I ask you this? When you teach yoga classes, do you focus more on the meditation aspect of it?
I certainly.
You give these white folks
the way that I. No. Here's the thing. When I teach at a studio, I teach, you know, for that studio and for that kind of level of people. And I like try to meet people where they are. I think the most powerful thing you can do in a yoga class is not tell people, hey, don't worry about doing this handstand. You should really be focusing on meditating, because that's not really helpful. I think if you can create an environment and an experience for people, it might lead them on their own to want to learn about like, oh, what's like this yoga thing about and why do I feel this way? And how can I maybe cultivate more of this quieting or stillness? Because at the end of the day, you can't make anyone do anything, right? Like people have to want to do things themselves. So whether that's take a teacher training and learn what yoga is really about, or maybe get curious about meditation, that's really my goal in yoga classes.
I see a question that maybe just I want to know, but if you go to a more traditional yoga class, say in India when you went, how is that different than a class here?
Not always. I mean, sometimes they'll talk about it, but so traditionally, and this is not everybody's view, but a lot of people will say that your yoga practice, your physical yoga practice is actually meant to help you be able to sit in meditation. Because imagine sitting in like a lotus for
it's
a long
brutal.
Time. Yeah. So yoga could help, right?
No, I super
not like, as brutal. It's impossible for me.
We were talking like, I mean, when I started meditating, I have a daily practice. I couldn't sit cross-legged on the floor. I couldn't because I would just collapse. I would just start thinking about my lower back because like same. I just wasn't used to sitting up like that. Mm-hmm. And so like a part of it was a strength, but also part of it's flexibility. Like those to me, those a lot of the times go hand in hand.
Okay. So I do think that, let me backtrack and for a second and say that I do think that your practice can be the object of your meditation. And there are people who do that in New York City.
Yeah.
But there are also like other schools that believe that the point of doing asana, not other schools, there's just even in those schools, there's a lot of people that will believe that the point of doing a yoga practice so that you can sit in meditation.
Yeah. In that standpoint, it's they are making it more just purely physical.
Who's they?
In the school where it's the yoga practice is to help you sit in meditation. Are you saying that they are like, you are getting your body physically ready to be able to sit in meditation?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
So BKS Iyengar actually is famously quoted for saying that your asana practice, that is the meditation that you can, and I'm not against that idea at all. Mm-hmm. And now Patabi Joyce's grandson, who's continuing that lineage, he has a similar sentiment about the Ashtanga practice. So, you know, if you are doing those practices and your intention is to treat that practice as a meditation, great. Not everybody feels that way.
But it's fascinating because everything that you're talking about, the meditation seems to be the point.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yoga is meditation.
Yeah. It's really, but I feel less stressed when I go to yoga. Mm-hmm. I'll finish yoga class. I feel a benefit that's psychological that is similar to me working out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess I've kind of, that's kind of where that question was originally coming from. So
let's just say you don't have to prescribe to yoga sutras, right? There are other kinds of yoga. One, like, let's go back to Iyengar Therapeutics, right? That is literally just yoga that's going to help you with what your problem is. Mm-hmm. And that's Iyengar school. So like, yeah, one thing can lead to another, but that's not to say that yoga doesn't have other benefits. And also when we think about meditation, there's two parts to this. Meditation has so many benefits that science is now discovering, and there's so many different kinds of meditation and they all have different benefits. So if you treat yoga as even like a little bit of like mindfulness, because mindfulness-based stress relief has proved to be like very helpful, right? It calms your parasympathetic nervous system. Also, most yoga classes are, I mean, I'm assuming like if you go to like a flow class or do you go to like Iyengar classes?
I tend to like to go to like more of the slow, what you were talking about, your childhood
yoga classes.
Yeah, because I don't know the poses well. So I like to sit in the, I went to a Yoga to the People class, I'm going to call them out, and I found it like, hundreds of people packed into one room.
Yes,
and they were going so fast. They were going so fast, but the thing is, I was like afraid that I was going to get injured because they were going so fast. And I was like, I don't know really what I'm supposed to do in this pose well enough. And then I saw a New York Times article like a week after that where they were like, maybe yoga's not for men because so many men are getting hip injuries.
Okay, that is not true because yoga is created for men, by men.
Right. It was just because for me, it was like the way people are teaching yoga and just like going so fast. I don't know. That was just my little soapbox about my issue with that.
No, that's totally cool. So you go to slower classes.
Yeah.
Do you link your breath with your movement?
I try to, yeah.
So actually,
to me, I agree with the concept of yoga as meditation.
And also just breathing, breathing evenly calms your parasympathetic nervous system. I mean, you're bound to feel, but you could do anything. And if you just kind of breathed in that way, breathe, is that the right word? Breathe. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll sounds funny, right?
It does. But
it would make you feel better. It would surely make you feel better. I don't think there's anything wrong with the fact that yoga is evolving and that, it's kind of turned into this hybridized, feel good, semi ambiguously spiritual, stretchy, fitnessy thing.
Well, that's the question, right? That becomes the question that I always ask is can you separate? I mean, and this is why there's like some college in had banned yoga classes because it was religious.
So yoga does not have to be religious. Again, going back to the Yoga Sutras.
How do you separate spirituality?
Like right now it's incredibly.
I don't think that actually yoga is spiritual, but I'm just gonna backtrack. If you look at the Yoga Sutras, there's a couple different paths outlined in the Yoga Sutras. One of them doesn't involve any concept of God or there being a higher being or anything. And any of the paths that do involve that, like there's different, you have different options to become enlightened. The paths that do involve that don't say what they are. It's just like, you have to believe in something higher and that might help you. And so like, if you're any religion, that can be the placeholder for your religion. So yoga is certainly not asking you to be a specific anything. Mm-hmm. In fact, you could be nothing if you want to be, right? You don't have to like combine religion with yoga. The spirituality is totally just something we've inserted into it. Like we've been like, hey, like we're going to,
I think that depends. Well, yeah. That depends on how you define spirituality.
Right. First. That's a nice question.
Yeah, especially if it was created to help with meditation. Meditation at its root back in the day was a spiritual practice, right?
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think there are spiritual meditation practices, but I also think there's plenty that aren't.
I think there are now, but I'm saying in its origin, meditation was meant to be a spiritual practice, right?
No, I think meditation requires that you have a worldview, which tends to be connected to a specific religion. Basically, it's just like, here are these different philosophies and you can adhere to one, and that's going to guide what your meditation practice is leading to. Like, what does it mean to achieve the goal of yoga? What's what I think you mean by meditation being attached to religion or spirituality. But meditation on its own is simply like one-pointed focus, right?
Right.
It doesn't have to be related to a specific higher being or anything like
that. Yeah, again, I'm not saying that's what it has to be now. I'm just saying at its origin, my understanding was that it was created by...
I think there's so many different kinds of meditation, it's hard to say that.
Okay, that's fair.
No, I mean, it's a question about, I mean, it is coming at the core of like how you define spirituality and what that
and
is.
That's a
long
question
that I'm not, that's not the point of this episode, and it's not, that's not relevant. I want to come back to the body though, because this health and wellness, though, I don't see a lot of people that have practiced yoga for a long time and are regular practitioners. I don't see them being fat very often. I see them being healthier. Why, if you're, the way you're talking about it as a meditation, there's still a, like a plethora of physical benefits. Sure. And I think it'd be fun to talk about them a little bit.
Yeah. I think that if you have a, I'm going to say you could totally be fat and be a yogi and that's fine.
They don't, I said, that, I didn't say you couldn't. I just say they don't tend to.
Sure. And I think there's a lot of reasons why.
Yeah.
I think that yoga just lends itself to like a healthier lifestyle because practicing yoga after eating poorly feels horrible. Like even if it's the night before, I mean, you really just, it feels terrible. You know, it lends itself to being really healthy. You're going to wake up at 6 a.m. and go practice or something like that. You know, then you're probably not staying out drinking. You're probably not eating something heavy. You're probably trying to get enough sleep. You probably want to give your body time to recover. Like if it's something that you start to do daily, you're just going to automatically make a lot of these changes so that you feel better in your practice. It's just a matter of kind of prioritizing, hey, like I'm noticing how I feel and that doesn't feel so good. So maybe I won't do that.
So that's interesting. So it's not specifically the hour that you spend in yoga that's making you healthier. It's the changes in your life around it.
I absolutely think that, the hour you spend in yoga is also making you healthier.
It's also, but it's not just that. It's also all of the other lifestyle changes that just kind of start to happen organically.
There is also a specific like way that people seem to get toned from yoga, like a specific yoga build.
There is. I want to know what the yoga build is.
It's like a leanness.
Okay, totally. Actually, that's totally true. I think there's two reasons for that. One is that yoga does kind of like rinse you out, you know, if you do like a well-balanced practice.
Sorry, it does really what?
Rinse you out is like not a technical term.
No, it's like flushes your system.
I don't know if it flushes your system, but like let's, for example, like shoulder stand, it's like good for your thyroid, or twisting can kind of help, not stimulate, but it can help your digestive system. Stuff like that. I mean, obviously it's going to have an effect on you if you do it over and over again. And the reason there's leanness is the same thing when you're doing these poses that are like really constricted, like, you know, you probably don't want to have that much on your body.
Right.
Like, I mean, you want to be strong, but, or if you're trying to be in a headstand, okay, I'm going to tell you, your legs are heavy. Like everyone's legs are heavy. You want to like be holding your foot up or like in a headstand, you probably want to like make it as easy on yourself as possible.
Right.
So I think that kind of happens on its own.
Wow.
I'm going to say like, no matter what kind of a yoga practice you have, whether you have a really fast paced vinyasa one or like more of an Iyengar or hatha yoga one, it's still the same. You're still holding these postures in a way in which it's just going to make more sense for you to be not necessarily super muscular, but to also have space. Like you really want to have space in yoga to be mobile.
So can we talk about strength as a concept? Because we were talking that there's I have a misconception about strength at times, that it's about muscle. It's about lifting a lot of weight. Yogis are strong. Like
you look so really, serious really right strong. Now.
I'm in a zone. I'm very rarely serious.
He's very serious, dude. What is strength to you? Physical strength, what is that to you?
Do you mean what it looks like visually?
Sure. Or like, what does it mean? Yeah. I don't know what I'm asking. So I'm like finding it.
My older brother is a power lifter.
Okay.
In contrast.
Wow. Okay.
And he's super strong.
Right.
He lifts really heavy weights. So I think that's one kind of strength. I have a teacher who is probably my height. And he can put his palms on the floor and then just like lift up into a handstand. And he's like super lean, like just looks like a normal dude. Like actually he's tiny, but because he's short and kind of small. But, you know, that's another kind of strength. There are people who can balance on one palm and they might look just like me. And I think that's another kind of strength.
Can you have all the strengths? Because it seems like you have to, with your body, you have to choose.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I will say I know people and I'm so impressed by them. I know people who have two physical passions. Like, you know, I do yoga and I'm a very serious biker. I do yoga and I'm a very serious runner. I know a lot of yogis who just have like other things that they do. And somehow like, I don't know how somebody does the splits and runs like a marathon, but I know people like that. So I know it's possible. I don't do that. I do other things, but not with the intention of like making that my main focus.
Sorry, you use the term yogis. At what point do you call someone a yogi? Just anyone who practices yoga as a yogi?
No, I don't know. I say that term very lightheartedly.
Okay.
As people who have a committed practice,
right.
You know, who consider themselves to be in the world of trying to practice yoga, whatever that may mean to them. So even though, you know, I kind of went on a soapbox about yoga sutras, in real life, I don't have the view that everybody must adhere to that. Mm-hmm. I think realistically that, look, Krishnamacharya brought Iyengar and Patabi Joyce to kind of like elevate or give more importance to yoga in India. But like before that, yoga was something else. And before that, it was something else. And before that, it was like yogis with mystical powers that people kind of like gypsies who they didn't want to like be around or thought were bad guys. So really it's like, it's going to continue to evolve. It's okay for me right now if people kind of come to it as they are and they explore, and I hope that they'll dig deeper, but I'm not like, I think if you call yourself a yogi and you go to yoga 3 times a week, that's okay. I'm cool with that.
So let me transition to this, because we do have to wrap up relatively soon.
Okay.
what would you advise for someone that hasn't practiced?
Go to basics.
Is interested. Would you recommend them doing it every day? Would you recommend them doing it not every day?
I think it's really nice to find 15 minutes to practice every day.
Oh, even okay.
If you just 15 minutes, wow.
I mean, if you're brand new, I'm not going to ask like for a lot.
But I also think
people struggle with time, right? I think, first of all, if you're new, go to basics. Don't go to a level 1, 2, 3 class. Go to basics, because they will explain basics to you, and that's what you need, and you'll have a solid foundation to go from. If you're practicing vinyasa, it's so easy to just like commit to doing 15 minutes in the morning. You can just do sun salutations, and you'll just start to kind of build more understanding of yoga physically in your body. And I think that, you know, over time you increase the length you practice. You have to practice every single day? No. Is it nice to practice 6 days a week? If you're like, I want to do this. I want to be a yogi. Like, go for it, you know?
Right.
I think days off are important, but yeah.
So is that your advice? We've been asking this question.
My advice.
Everyone. What should our listeners do tonight, tomorrow, when they're done with listening? Was that your advice? Find 15 minutes or go to a basics class. Is that your advice? Or do you have a different?
Yeah, well, no, my advice actually to listeners would be to not be discouraged by the first class they go to.
Okay.
My advice would be to go to a basics class at one studio and then another studio and then another studio until you find a teacher who inspires you, because then maybe you'll find it within yourself to want to continue to do that, whether that's your own self-practice at home or going to this teacher's class 3 times a week, but like find somewhere a space that like makes you feel like, oh, hey, I get this and I like it and I want to do it, because that's kind of where your practice will happen.
That's amazing. Guys, it's time for stupid questions.
Okay.
All right, stupid questions. I can't come up with a melody for that.
No, dude, let's do that. I wish I didn't talk over. We'll just cut that out.
Stupid questions.
Perfect. All right, guys, refresher. Stupid questions are, we ask some questions you guys might be afraid to ask because you think they're stupid. And then we ask some questions that we know are stupid, really just so I can have fun. Okay.
First
stupid question. I think we got to lead with this. Why can't white people say namaste?
That is a great question. You know, it's not just namaste. It's many things. And I think it's just that it's just a repetition of the wrong pronunciation over and over. P.S. There's a studio that sells a shirt that says namastizzle, and it like drives me crazy. I just think it's ridiculous.
Namaste in bed. I will jump out an 8-story window if I hear that one more time.
On Instagram.
Namaste in bed.
I should have posted that on my account. Tag you guys.
Oh God.
Okay. All right. So we have a, we're still exploring the answer to that. Crowd listeners, crowdsource that. So please answer that.
We all need to just come together and like tell people. I think people don't know.
I'm gonna work on that.
I always say namaste.
Do you ever feel like the desire, or do you ever correct your other teachers or other teachers?
I think people sometimes ask me, also they hear what I say and they're like, oh, she's from India.
People don't ever hear me say namaste. They'll say namaste. I'll be like, namaste to you too. And they'll just keep going. I'll be like, bitch, I was trying to tell you something.
Yeah. Well, if you're in yoga, it might work.
Yeah, maybe.
Do I need to buy Lululemon pants to do yoga?
No, buy athletic pants. Just kidding. no, you don't. You can practice in anything. I own maybe like one pair of Lululemon pants, and I practice yoga every day.
Am I bad at yoga if I can't touch my toes?
Yeah, don't even bother. is that you? No, I'm just kidding. If you can't touch your toes, yoga's going to be so helpful to you. It's going to change your body and your life. When I started, I was a runner and a soccer player, like hardcore, and I couldn't put my hands on the floor. And now my palms are on the floor. So just saying.
Here's a question. Practice. At the end of yoga that I've done, granted it's been at like gyms or whatever, where they have you lie down and
nap.
Yeah, like nap. And then sometimes the yoga teacher would come and like put something underneath my head or something. It was like an odd, I didn't know what was happening. It felt
did
nice.
Did she put like a blanket under your head, or did she like give you like a neck massage?
It was like a scent. Yeah. And like,
did she like elongate your neck?
Yes, elongated the neck.
Okay. So the last posture in yoga class is Shavasana, which translates to corpse pose. It's kind of where, in a yogic sense, it's where your practice assimilates into your body. It's really nice to let your body rest.
Oh, yeah. Best part of the yoga class.
Yeah. And what your teacher was doing for you is actually really nice. She was teachers in classes will give hands-on adjustments where they may help you correct or deepen your pose. Not everybody does that, but some people do. And so that's what you might do for Shavasana is like, hey, your neck is like this. Like maybe I'll just elongate it, or maybe it'll just make you feel better so you can relax. Like you can really actually rest for a moment.
Yeah.
We have to wrap up. Our time is run out with our now dear friend, Aditi Shah. Tell people in New York where they can find you, where they can join you for class, how they can do that.
Okay, cool. So I have a website, which might be the best way to find me. It's just Aditi Shah Yoga.
Aditi Shah, AditiShah yoga.com. All the stuff's there. Thank you guys for listening. This is the point where we tell you that your flexibility and your meditation, I can't do it better than you will. You
gotta do it. Listen, if you want to achieve enlightenment,
there you go.
Rate our podcast 5 stars. Leave a good review. It is the next best thing
to
Nirvana. This is the practice of yoga. The first step is actually 5 stars. It's a good deed. It's good karma. Exactly. So just do that, guys.
Tune in to us next time for another great episode. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We'll catch you next time.
God bless.